We could get into a whole range of jokes about our memories of beer or the things we wish we could remember while drinking beer. Jokes aside, there are reasons for keeping good records about the history of beer and its creation. Good enough that Oregon State University's archives now include the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives. What will those archives contain? What do they contain already? For that, we turn to Tia Edmondson-Morton, who's an OSU librarian and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Tia, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit, first of all, about what the archives are containing. What are some of the things that go on at the OSU archives?
A lot of talking to people, actually, at this point. We do have strong collections already because we house the university archives, so that means that the records, the research records that are created by the university, most of them eventually end up with us. So yesterday I was looking at some correspondence between people in the chemistry department and people in the dean's office who were talking in 1914 about whether they should continue hops research given that they assumed prohibition was going to happen. So those types of correspondence items, we would have those, but also research reports. So the early work that was done in the 1930s here on campus around hops research and brewing research. So those are some of the older things that we have now. We also work directly with our extension communications people to get some of their newer photographs because they're out taking pictures either on campus of researchers doing work or out in the field. So lots of things that are produced as a part of the daily normal work of the people who do this research, that those are the kinds of things that we would traditionally expect to have in a university archive or in a special collections. But what makes this really special, I think, is the community aspect. So it's gathering from the community, talking to the community, working with the community to save their stories. So the things that are starting to come in would be artwork from McMiniman's or label art from Ninkasi, lots of photos and stories from people. So it's an eclectic mix, kind of through time.
I'm curious about just the nature of the archives. You mentioned taking pictures more contemporarily, but also looking at paper records. I mean, it seems like over time the archives, the general nature would change. You'd start moving off into more digital things. I mean, are you saving things like email messages and stuff like that?
Email can be a can of worms. if we think about the things that I'm an archivist, and I have to tell you, well, maybe it's the physician heal thyself, that we don't necessarily do a great job of keeping our own records. Emails tougher, but definitely the electronic records. I think there are exciting things that we can save and preserve, whether those are drafts of papers that people have written, whether they're design files. I was talking to the design graphic artist at Ninkasi, and when he creates new things, he doesn't sketch things out. He does them in InDesign, and then there's the main piece in the middle, but then all of his thoughts are essentially contained around the periphery in that design file. So those are the kinds of exciting, creative ways that we can think about saving electronic records. Pictures, the challenge is naming conventions, honestly, is whether people track what they actually have taken pictures of. And that's not just a brewing archives problem. That's definitely an archival profession issue.
In what sense? You mean that people don't stick with a consistent way of naming photographs?
I think we take a lot of photographs, and it's a matter of whether when we upload them to our computer, upload them to the cloud, whether we're renaming. So we get a lot of IMJ underscore 1567.
Oh, sure, yeah, right.
So whether they're changing those file names. The computer or your cameras or your phone will store a lot of information about that photo, where it was taken, the date it was taken, which we don't get from analog print photographs. But if we get, say, 100 photos from somebody, it's a lot harder to go one by one on a computer as opposed to one by one in a box.
Right. And you mentioned the cloud, though. I mean, is some of the stuff at the Oregon State Archives stored in the cloud?
Yes, but not in a more in a project management way. So we use Google Drive as a project management tool.
Like a temporary place to keep things on their way to a final destination?
Right. They will go, the electronic files will go into a deeper storage, a dark storage, and then there's always a use copy or an access copy. And all of the things that were bringing in that will be public will end up being online. There are some electronic files that they may never actually be online. It may be something that people would come here to visit in the same way that they would visit a box full of records. I think when I first started thinking about digital files, I thought, well, they can all be online, but they don't have to be. If we think about some of the things that we save, there's not a kind of immediacy that people would want to see those online.
Our guest on the Jefferson Exchange is Tia Edmondson Morton. She's a librarian and archivist at Oregon State University's archives. We're talking about the addition of the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives recently and more general ideas about what goes on at archives. Join us on the Exchange. You might have some questions or comments. Join us at 800-838-3760. Anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, the local number is 541-552-6782. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So who had the first inkling to say, hey, let's keep archives on hops and brewing in Oregon? How long ago does this go back?
Well, as far as the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives, it goes back to last summer. I was at a wedding with some library colleagues, and we were at the Rogue Hop Farmyard in Independence, and there was a tour that was given, and we were all on the tour, and there was local history, there was hops history, there was brewing history, and I think that was the seed, the kernel of watching people get really engaged with history, which is always the angle that I come from. I mean, mainly my life before being a brewing archivist was the instruction and outreach end. So I'm always thinking about how people connect with history. And maybe a couple weeks later, I went to a leadership institute in Iowa with the Oregon wine archivist, Rachel Woody, and an archivist in Kentucky who works to document the bourbon industry. And I was listening to them talk about their experiences with their communities and really working directly with those communities to save their history. And I thought back to that tour, and I thought, wow, this, you know, we live in such an agricultural and cultural and economic boom for craft beer in our area. And I thought, what a great thing that would be to actually have a brewing archive. And I came back and I searched through our collections to see whether we had records already to support that kind of initiative, and we did. And then, like I said at the beginning, it's been a lot of promoting and talking. We've held some events. I've written some articles. I've done some interviews myself, and it has taken off. It's a very exciting thing to be a part of, and I think it will just continue to grow. People are really very excited about it.
So, what existed already? I mean, you said that there were some things in the archives already from the beer industry.
Well, mainly, sort of tangentially from the beer industry. The main, definitely the kernel of our collection had to do with hops research. So in 1930, the USDA and the school co-founded a USDA hops research facility on campus. And so they'd been doing research before that, but that was the point where they really ramped up research on hops. And so it was hops are only essentially used for beer, so they were doing some brewing research. and funding was coming through a United States-level brewing federation. So there was funding coming in for that research in the earlier years from larger brewing companies. So the strength was definitely on the hop side. Now, starting in 1995, which is new in archives terms, was when the fermentation science program was officially established on campus. So now we do have a full fermentation science major. You can get a doctorate in fermentation science. And so those are the types of records we will start to collect. There's often a lag in archives of when things actually make it into the archives, just because they're not archives until they're not sort of immediately useful to people. So a lot of those records are still being used. So I think the connection to the brewing industry is definitely where I'm focusing my efforts right now, just because that is a weaker spot of, in our collection. But the people that I've talked to in the brewing industries have just been so open and so friendly and so willing to talk and to think about how to save their history and kind of the history of the larger brewing industry as well.
I imagine they're delighted for somebody interested in saving their stuff, the information about what they do in their industry. But I imagine you probably also get a few like, you want a what? responses.
Not as many as I think that I thought I would get. You know, for the most part, I haven't had any roadblocks at all. I think there's where the questions come from is, that sounds like a great idea, but what does that actually mean? you know, what is an archive and how are the breweries producing archival records? So it's been a lot of me thinking about that. What does it mean to archive living culture? how do you archive a business that is currently existing? And so there are lots of concerns around that, whether it's, you know, concerns for corporate privacy, whether it's concerns over copyright. So I think those are the kind of secondary questions after people say, well, that's great.
Right. Again, Tia Edmondson-Morton, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a librarian and archivist at Oregon State University. We're talking about the creation of the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives at the OSU Archives. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. That's anywhere in our listening area. Our other number, our local number for the Rogue Valley, Jackson and Josephine counties, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the idea of how things are stored in the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives. It's not like you'd like pick three shelves in the archives or something, particularly in this digital age. So, I mean, how much space or hard drive space or combination thereof do you require for this?
That's a good question. And it's a...
And it will grow over time.
It will grow over time. I think, though, that in the... So to answer the physical question, it is currently on multiple shelves, mainly because that's where there's space in all of the collections that we have. But also on multiple shelves because I tend to get things that don't fit in a standard archival box. So if you think about, like, a paper box or a banker's box, that's the majority of the sizes. You know, we would have paper, so that's the size of the paper. What I'm getting tends to be, you know, posters or whole sheets of brewing labels or coasters, things like that. So they're kind of non-standard size. So that means that I end up with a lot of different sizes of boxes. On the digital side, it's it's hard to say right now how much actual space that the archival records are taking up. I think, again, it's not just a question of the records that are produced by the brewing archives. Storage and scanning, in a way, is the easy part. The hard part is retrieval. So what I think a lot about is not necessarily how much storage space, because you can buy storage space. And in the library, we have storage space. So that's not as much of my concern. My concern is, so if we bring in all of this digital media, how do we make the decisions of what goes online and how do we provide access online? And kind of at the other end would be, how do we actually ingest materials from people that are digital? So it's not just me going with my external hard drive and plugging it into their computer, or it's not just somebody emailing me a bunch of pictures. You know, are there ways that we can ingest that material from you sitting down in Ashland up to me up here in Corvallis without using email? Not that email's bad. It's just that, you know, it limits the amount of size.
Oh, right. Yeah. When you get those warnings about, you're really sure you want to send this message, it's larger than 5 megabytes.
Exactly. And that's what I think. We want those really high-resolution files of photos, because then you can blow them up more so people can see more detail if they want to really zoom in on somebody's face, for instance. And audio files and video files are just by nature huge. So that's just to be expected.
How choosy are you then when creating something like the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives? I mean, do you reject some things out of hand at the very beginning because it's like, it doesn't quite fit our mission? Or do you collect everything and then cull later?
I think that the function of a mission statement, and one of the first things that I set about to do was to create a mission statement. I think the function of a mission statement is to be able to say, this is what we want, and this is what we just can't. This is not the appropriate home for it. There are probably other homes that we can refer you to, but this isn't the home for it. So I think there are easy lines that where there are lines that we first thought were easy to draw, like Oregon, or, you know, hops all through the ages, but just craft brewing, because there are a lot of people who are already documenting other historical societies or libraries would have information about pre-prohibition. So we were really looking at the post-prohibition, but initially really just the craft brewing movement. So just the last 30 years, because those are the records that nobody is collecting right now. So that was kind of the initial plan. And we also knew that we couldn't really take artifacts just because we're not a museum and we don't have facilities to take care of those things. So those were the original rules. And as rules go, of course, then they get broken. So almost immediately people started contacting me either with research questions about the pre-prohibition or just after prohibition questions revolving around what happened. And then people started contacting me about records from pre-prohibition. And then people started asking more recently, well, would you think about things in Washington, or would you think about expanding it to a Pacific Northwest archive? And I think we're trying to stay to Oregon. So that's kind of an easy bound right now, easy boundary that we can fall within right now. As far as what types of materials we take, that tends to be on a one-on-one basis. So I will either talk to people over the phone, or I'll visit with them, or they'll send me stuff or pass stuff off to me and say, if you don't want this, give it back to me, but this is the type of stuff that I have. It is a sort of nicely defined and an ill-defined project, because in many ways it's if you say it's a community archiving or a community participation project where I really do want to work with the people who are in these communities, then it's kind of up to them to tell me this is the important stuff that needs to be saved, and they are definitely the experts on their communities and their industries, so I really listen to them as a kind of ultimate guiding force. If they say it's important, then it rises to the top in my mind.
But you must end up in situations where people offer things to you and you think, wow, this is great, this is wonderful, but not quite along with our mission, so I can't take it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, again, it's an archival, larger archival concern of, there are a lot of archivists who get into this field because everything seems precious. And I think that's we're always towing that line between trying to be fortune tellers and saying, well, this is what I think people 50 years from now or 100 years from now would really want somebody to have saved, while at the same time recognizing there's only so much physical space, there's only so much even staff time to describe digital items. And I think, too, the point of a mission statement is really to pull together materials that tell a story. So if you want to be a destination for researchers, then it makes sense that you collect around a certain topic or a certain time period or a certain geographic location, and not everything in the world, because it may be more appropriate for those things to live at another repository. But that can be a tricky thing, because archivists also like to collect stuff.
But as you pointed out, this is, you're not collecting artifacts. This is not a museum. But, I mean, is it possible that some of the things you end up with could be used by a museum for a display?
Oh, sure. And I make rules and then I break them. So one of the first big accessions that I brought in was from McMiniman's. And in that accession were wonderful coasters, almost a full run of their coasters that their main artist passed off to me with descriptions, which was incredible, descriptions of who did them and the date and all of that. But also in that lot of stuff was a cask. So it's a small keg, a small wooden keg with this fabulous hand-drawn, looks like it's drawn in Sharpie, picture on the side of it, and a six-pack of Hammerhead, bottled Hammerhead, which was, you know, every time people see it, they say, they bottled Hammerhead? And not very much. and it's from 1995, so, or mid-1990s, so not drinkable. But I think what we do take, we would take artifacts, again, like the bottled Hammerhead. I mean, that has a significance, and it can kind of easily fit in a box. Where it would get much more complicated is if somebody wanted to give us, like, a hop dryer. or even like a brewing kettle. I mean, that those are the types of things that we wouldn't house, museums might. But I think the more visual types of items that we collect, those definitely, I think, would be appealing to other museums and are very display-worthy.
Can people look online? We have just a few seconds left here. Can people look online at some of the things you've collected already for the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives?
Sure. So the easiest way to find us, everything is sort of linked from Facebook. The webpage is really long, so I won't give it right now. But if you do a search for the Oregon Hops and Brewing Archives in Google, you'll find it. But our Facebook page is Brewing Archives with an S, and Twitter is the same handle.
Brewing Archives. Okay, and we have links as well from jeffexchange.org and from our Facebook page. Tia Edmondson Morton, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Bye. We will take a short break on the Exchange. When we come back, Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac, followed by a talk about some Earth Day observances in the Ashland area. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10.